Hey everyone, it's Cam Hurt, host of the Best Show Ever podcast, and we have got a second season coming out very soon that I am very excited about. We've got some very cool special guests, including musical acts that we all love, like Karina Reichman, Daniel Donato, Jake Brownstein from Eggy, Rick and Peter from Goose, and many more. Tune in for new episodes dropping on Osiris Media March 5th on the Best Show Ever podcast.
Hi, listeners. I want to tell you about a cause that I'm involved with at Heritage Radio Network. HRN is celebrating its 15th year, and to celebrate, we're deepening our commitment to giving voice to the next generation of food system storytellers, and we need your help. Our internship and fellowship programs help activate new possibilities for underrepresented and underestimated young people through experiential journalism, audio engineering, and production training. Through these unique programs, HRN helps food equity stewards build essential workforce readiness skills that expand their potential and foster economic mobility. Please consider supporting these critical programs. And with a minimum donation, you can be entered to win a dinner for two at an amazing restaurant in one of eight cities and tickets to a concert at a great venue in one of those cities. We have incredible partners across the country who have donated, as they also share our passion for helping to educate the next generation of food system storytellers. Check out heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. That's heritageradionetwork.org/15 to donate and enter to win today. And make sure you donate before March 31st. Thank you.
Osiris.
All right. It's 36 from the Vault. My name is Steve.
My name is Rob.
And we have reached the final episode of our mini tour season here. It's a late winter tour, or actually it's an early winter tour. It's a late 2022 tour, but we're early in the winter. And we're calling this Comfort Listens because these are shorter episodes where we're talking about music that has given us comfort in recent months. In the jam world, some of it debt-related, some of it not. We've gone all over the map here. We talked about Legion of Mary last week. We delved into Goose and Trey Anastasio in the same week. Can't wait to see the numbers on that episode. And we kicked off... What did we kick off with? It's been so long that I can't remember our first episode.
Philco, of course.
We talked about Philco, of course. Right. Phil Lesh. But now we're going to the mothership, finally. That's right. In our fourth episode.
Hey friends, my name is Zach Lupitin. You may know me from the band Dust Bowl Revival, but I also host a music discovery podcast called The Show on the Road. For the last five seasons, I've been able to dive deep and have intimate chats with folks like the Lumineers, Ani DeFranco, Wolf Peck, Keb Moe, Lake Street Dive, Bela Fleck, and more. So guess what? After 150 conversations with some of my favorite songwriters from around the world, we are bringing brand new episodes to the Osiris Network. New interviews and intimate acoustic performances will be coming at you this summer. And which episodes are coming next, you ask? Good
morning. I am Zach Goody, the lead singer for the band Smash Mouth.
Our band is called Milky Chance. We are based in Berlin.
My name is David Shaw. I sing and write songs with my band, The Revivalists.
Trust me, these conversations go some wild places. So subscribe to The Show on the Road on Osiris, and we'll see you soon.
Rob, you picked this one. What are we going to be talking about?
Yeah, just to mention up top that our little mini tour here is presented by Smart Wool.
Oh, nice, yes.
Nice warm apparel for a late fall, early winter tour. Check out Smart Wool. So we've you know, had some tangential discussions with the Grateful Dead so far. You know, 36 from the Vault was, perhaps is, a Grateful Dead podcast. So let's talk about what the Grateful Dead has put out since we went off the air. Most notably, there's been Dave's picks and things. There's been various Grateful Dead releases, of course, but most notably was this big, giant Madison Square Garden 1980s box set put out. 17 CDs, 6 shows, 2 shows each from 1981, 1982, and 1983. A really interesting set. So I have not heard the whole thing. I don't know if you have, Steve. Did you pick up this box set? No.
No, I have not. And I haven't gotten this album yet, although, because they're all MSG shows, but the one that they released as a standalone album is from 81, right? March of 81?
That's right. March 9th, 1981.
And I do love spring of 81, Grateful Dead. I actually, you know, I've talked about how I'm not big on listening to shows in sequence necessarily, but I did do that once with spring of 81. I went on a Grateful Dead tour.
Nice. How many shows is that?
I don't remember exactly. I didn't do the whole tour. I bailed. Okay. That's where I learned. I'm like, I can't do this sequential thing. A little too much for me. But I think I made about 12 or 13 shows. Like the tour starts in Chicago, I believe, like late January. Like they play Chicago Theater, I think it is. And then, you know, they end up at Madison Square Garden.
So you didn't make it to the show when you did that tour?
No. I think I bailed somewhere in like mid-February.
Okay. Okay.
But So like it was fun listening to this record for that reason.
Right. So the one that they released on streaming, which is the one we're going to talk about in this episode, is that 1981 show, March 9th. I'm still kind of torn on whether I want the whole box. I think I'm going to put it on my Christmas list and see if somebody else will spend $180 on it for me. Because the reason I wanted to talk about this show is because I feel like I grew a lot over the course of 36 from the Vault in my appreciation of 80s Dead and Brent era Dead. And this box set coming out and this particular show coming out on streaming was a great like test of that. Like I was actually kind of excited when they released this, more so than if they had released, you know, if they were like, here's 3 shows from 77, I would have been like, okay, yeah, it's another box set of 77 from the Grateful Dead. But when they announced this one has really cool looking art and packaging and everything too, I'm like, I think I really want to hear that, which I don't think I would have said before we started recording 36 from the Vaults, because these shows, or this show in particular, is Brenty as hell. It's a super Brenty show. Well, so I really want to talk about it with you. Yeah.
It's funny you say that, because as we were putting these episodes together, Dave's Picks 44 showed up.
Okay, yeah.
And that's a show from near the end of Brent's tenure. It's a University of Oregon in Eugene, June 23rd, 1990. So I think Brent died like a month later.
Yeah.
And by the way, I support you entering the 80s, embracing the 80s. I don't want to push you along too much, but if you're going to call this show Brenty as hell, you got to hear this Dave's Picks 44, because you are going to have to revise your opinion, my friend. Okay. Because this show is super Brenty. We're getting solo Brent in the show. We're getting like Far From Me in here.
Okay, that's true. There is no Brent songs on here. Yeah.
And you know, look, I mean, this, when this CD arrived, and I don't want to hijack this by just talking about Dave's Picks 44, although I love Dave's Picks 44. This is like a great record. Kicks off with Feel Like a Stranger, into West LA Fadeaway. I was like, hell yeah, here we go.
Yeah. It's a sleazy as hell. Yeah.
We're getting silky right away. And then we're getting to like, you know, Jerry singing about drug deals gone bad and 80s Los Angeles. You get an Eyes of the World kicking off disc 2, which I got to say, the Dead, you know, I'm famous for complaining about tempos with Eyes of the World, that I'm a supremacist for 73 and 74 Eyes of the Worlds. I feel like they get too fast by the end of the 70s. I feel like in the early 90s, they started playing it at the right tempo again.
Yeah, yeah. I think I always thought it was a Hornsby influence, but it sounds like it was before he came back, right?
Yeah, and it's probably because they're a little bit older, too. So, like, they kind of aged back into playing it slower. But this Eyes of the World is awesome. And so, yeah, I'm just saying I support your embrace of Brent era Grateful Dead, but there you can go much Brentier.
Yeah, it is than this Brentier March 9th. And Brentiest.
This MSG 81, you're putting a toe in Brent. You can put a whole foot or your whole body in as you progress in the decade.
Well, I would love to talk about that show with you, but I was a real dumbass and forgot to sign up for Dave's picks for this year. I did sign up for next year. So Dave, you have my $100. Looking forward to getting your picks next year. This show though, okay, talking about Brent and this show, what really stands out, and we talked about this a little bit whenever we covered a Brent show during the Dick's Picks run, they are just so much better at mixing Brent shows now. So shout out to Dave for producing this set. Shout out to Jeffrey Norman, who is the guy that does the mastering on all of the modern Grateful Dead releases. I don't know what happened technologically, because I know there were issues with the master tapes of 80s shows where they started recording to cheaper cassette tapes instead of reel to reels. I don't know all the details, but that was always the excuse in the Dick's Pick series of why the 80s shows sounded like pretty bad. Like, especially relative to the 60s and 70s shows. But they figured something out, because when Brent is properly mixed as part of the Grateful Dead sound, as it is on this 81 show, I appreciate his contribution so much more. Like, that, all the things that drove me nuts about Brent and the 80s shows we covered, usually really weird artificial keyboard tones, sound, I think, frankly, pretty awesome. Like, once you have them at the right volume relative to everybody else in the band. Did you think that this like stood out as something that it sounded a lot better?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely sounded better than the Dick's Picks that we've heard. And, you know, again, with Brent, I just feel like him in the late 80s is like superior to early 80s, because he is more of a presence and he is rising to the co-front man role that he really had. You know, like, this, not to keep going back to Dave's Picks 44, but there's a Cassidy on there, and it's like, oh, you hear Bob and Brent singing together, and we've talked about that on this show, like how that's such a great era for Cassidy. But yeah, I think on the Dick's Picks, it's not even that he has like crazy tones, it just always sounds so plunky. It always sounds like a guy hitting like a tack or something, and not a keyboard. And on this MSG 81 show, it sounds like an electric piano. You know, it sounds like a real keyboard. It is interesting, because, you know, you shouted out Lemieux and Jeffrey Norman, and definitely shout out to them, because this set does sound great. I looked up the audience recording of this show, and that sounds like pretty fantastic. And you look at the comments on Live Archive, and the commenters at least are talking about how this is like a well-known audience tape that people love. And, you know, I'm glad that they put out this proper release so you can hear it in its full form. But like, if it didn't exist and you just heard the audience tape, like, even that would sound better than the Brent era Dick's Picks that we heard.
Yeah. Yeah. No, after you said that, I went and listened to the audience, and it doesn't sound that much different from the soundboard, to be honest. And like, I was doing sort of a close headphones listen to the official release, I noticed a lot of patches. We talked about this a lot with Dick's Picks, where they would patch the soundboard with an audience source. And I'm pretty sure they just use that audience source to patch it, because it sounds like, and you can, unless you're like really listening on headphones and really paying attention, you don't hear it flip back and forth very obviously.
The only difference I can really tell is that the audience is a little bit louder on the audience tape. And I mean, did they cut down on some of the, I think they cut out some of the noodling or tuning up between the songs. Cause we're going to talk about the China Rider.
Yes.
From here, and like on the audience tape, I swear they're like tuning up for like 2 or 3 minutes before they start playing.
Yeah. I think they chop that out. Yeah.
Like on the audience, it's like the audience China is like 11 and a half minutes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think on the proper, on the album that they put out, I think it's maybe 8 or 9 minutes. So they cut out some of the tuning. But yeah, other than that, if you listen to them side by side, it would be hard to know which one is which.
Right. Yeah. So as you mentioned, I wanted to talk about the China Rider, which I want to say, when I first listened to this, I was on vacation with my wife. We were in Sedona in Arizona. And I was like, I got to listen to a Dead show while we're driving around this beautiful landscape. Like, the Grateful Dead are a great road band, particularly in like the Southwest. I probably should have gone for maybe like more country rock Dead, like a 71 show might have been more fitting. But I was like, hey, this just came out. I'm going to put this on. I'm going to force my wife to listen to Bob do CC Rider as we're driving around in this beautiful landscape, where it's got a pretty good first set. It's like what you want from an 80s Dead set, right? It starts with Feel Like a Stranger, it goes into Althea, there's a good Bird Song, there's a Deep Ellum Blues, which is kind of cool. But in the middle of New Minglewood Blues, there is an absolutely bonkers sound appears in the first solo of the jam of Minglewood Blues. And I will tell you that this is the first time since we stopped recording 36 in the Vault that I was like, I wish I had a podcast to talk about this crazy sound that shows up in Minglewood Blues. I tweeted at a guy that it was like phantom limb syndrome, when people like have amputated limbs and they feel a tingle in the arm that isn't there anymore. It was like a phantom podcast syndrome, where I was like, this is like the most 36 from the Vault thing. So much to my delight, Minglewood ends the first set. It goes into the second set and they start up China Cat Sunflower. And that same crazy sound shows up again in the first minute of China Cat Sunflower. And I was like, yes, this is what I want now from 80s Dead, is just some like incredibly bonkers tones. But the thing was, I didn't know who was making this sound.
Yeah. Because is that Brent or is that Bob doing a talk box? Like, that was my, like, to me, it sounds like like Peter Frampton-esque.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
Like Bon Jovi doing, Shot Through the Heart and You're to Blame, you know, like the You Give Love a Bad Name. Is that the one that has the talk box on it? Or is it? Okay.
I can hear it in my head, but I can't remember the rest of the song. Yeah. You're right.
Living on a Prayer. Living on a prayer is the one with the talk. Yeah.
How can I forget?
Yeah, that sound.
That's it. That is what it sounds like. So I immediately thought, this must be one of the guitarists, right? And usually I'm like, oh, Bobby probably made some terrible choice with his tone in the 80s. That's what I'm always complaining about. But no, Bobby's still there. And I'm like, well, all right, well, Jerry was, you know, starting to get into weird, you know, this is post-Mutron. Maybe he was putting his Mutron through a weird distortion pedal and was making this crazy noise. And I listened closely and Jerry's still there. So I've narrowed it down now to the fact that it is indeed Brent. And what I think it is if you remember, the studio version of Alabama Getaway has this like synthesizer solo, which sounds like a synthitar. It's like a synthesized guitar. And I'm pretty sure it's the same synthesizer in the same setting, similar sound on both Minglewood Blues and China Cat Sunflower. So it's just like such a hilarious and perfect 80s Grateful Dead choice. That you've got two amazing guitar players playing, you know, actual guitars. And then Brent's over there like, you know what? I'm going to make my synthesizer sound like a guitar too. But of course, it sounds like a synthesizer pretending to be a guitar. So it sounds like a talk box, or it sounds like somebody with this like intensely synthetic auto wah going on. It's a totally crazy decision and I love it. So that's what first drew me to this China Rider. And then that he only uses that sound in the intro. He doesn't use it the whole song or anything, which is probably a good thing. But then it turns out, you know, the more I listen to this China Rider is kind of amazing. I thought, I was always of the opinion that China Rider after, you know, 74, let's say, was in decline. We talked about this with like some of the 77 versions that popped up on Dick's Picks, that it was like, it's China Rider. We love hearing it. It sounds great. It can never reach the heights that it reached in 73, 74. This one really popped out to me and was like, man, this is actually a pretty serious China Rider in an era that I would not have expected it to be taken into an interesting or longer direction in the jam.
Yeah, it's interesting because, you know, you have the climax that happens during I Know You Rider that we all wait for. But for the most part, I feel like they write a groove. And it's not really about the big dramatic gonna knock you over type moment. It is, I'm probably reaching with this, but like, it's slightly krautrocky to me. Like, it just rides a groove and it's like you hear them interlock with each other so intricately. And it is more about just appreciating how they're able to maintain that mood over the course of like, what is it, about 13, 14 minutes?
Yeah.
When you add up both songs. And that's what drew me into it. Because I don't think it's like an obviously great China Rider the first time you hear it. It wasn't to me anyway. Like when you said you want to talk about it, I listened to it. And I thought that's pretty good. But it didn't knock me out, really. It was only like after the third or fourth listen that I was really kind of appreciating like the subtlety of what they were doing here. And that's what I think ultimately like won me over. I mean, you looked this up on Hediversion. I mean, this is like considered like one of the great China Riders, isn't it?
Yeah, here I am saying, wow, I can't believe this great China Rider I discovered that like nobody ever heard about that Dave finally put out. And what a great deep cut that he pulled out of the archive. Then I looked it up on Hediversion. It's the top rated 80s China Rider. It's the first China Rider that appears on Hediversion. It's at number 10, I believe. It's the only, the highest rated one that isn't in that like 70s, early 70s sweet spot. So it is, even before this release came out, was known as like, if you want to hear a great later China Rider, this is the one you go to. So this was, I guess, common knowledge to Deadheads far more savvy than I, but yeah, very well respected. And yeah, I totally agree with your take on it. It's like, it doesn't peak as hard as like a 70s one. It doesn't get as weird as a 70s one either. It's just kind of like finds a zone and sits there for a long time. It kind of has like a little mini peak in the jam that sounds like it's about to pop into I Know You're Right or where it normally would. But then Jerry like pushes it for another couple minutes before he gets to, you know, the singing part of I Know You're Rider, which is really nice. And then the solos in Rider are particularly strong as well. So it kind of encapsulates what I like about this whole show, which is not really a show that has anything other than this China Rider. It doesn't have anything like superlative, right? There's nothing that is like an absolute classic version in this entire show. But it hits that like thing that I'm starting to appreciate about the 80s Dead, where it just has like a really pleasant like sound, like floaty sound for the entire runtime. It's not maybe as experimental or ambitious as a 70s Dead concert, but it has, and you're going to accuse me of it being a backhanded compliment, but it's something that sounds really pleasant and that I would love to just put on, for like a good solid comfort listen, say.
I think, because I take issue with it not being as experimental or as mind-blowing, because I don't think that this is the peak era of Brent. I think it's like 87 to 90. And I think if you listen to the best of the Dead at that time, that's where it moves beyond something that's just pleasant or is sitting in like an entertainment zone or like where we're just being a professional rock band. I think it does become something more transcendent at that time, in that era of the Dead. And I think it's because Brent does have a bigger role in the band. I think he sounds better here because of the recording or how it's mixed or whatever, but he still is not as Brent-y as he's going to be later on in the decade.
Right.
Again, I'm going to shout out Without a Net on here, because I think if you listen to that record, you know, you listen to them, like what they're doing like with Branford Marsalis and Eyes of the World, I'll put that with any Eyes of the World from the 70s in terms of like expanding what that song is and taking it in a different direction. I'll put that with any Eyes of the World from the 70s. I think that that really is them kind of pushing and taking it in a different direction. So again, I would say like for full on Brent, it's just not the early 80s. I think it's the late 80s.
I see.
Into 90 for me anyway. I think, you know, and again, I'll go back to Dave's Picks 44.
Right.
Great Brent moments on there. And because I think he has a little bit more to do and they gave him more free reign. What's cool about this, though, going back to the China Rider, is that I think Brent is right there with Jerry and Bob in terms of the interplay. You know, you think of the interplay of the guitars and you have Phil in there, of course, taking a prominent role. But like what Brent is doing on it sounds like electric piano. It adds to that hypnotic groove of this version that I don't think, I mean, Keith obviously was an amazing player, but I just think, you know, Brent is adding his own flavor to it, and he's adding something that I don't think you would get from a 70s China writer, as great as those are. And obviously this China writer is an outlier in terms of all the great ones. I think if you look at that list, you have this one at number 10, and then it just goes back to the 70s.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
You know, it's so, you know, this is a pretty unique thing. But I don't know. I love the subtlety of it. I love that it's not going for the obvious peaks, but more of like a sort of ambient almost payoff.
Right.
Like, it's going to be the sum total of the zone out of this version. It's going to hit you at the end.
It's going to wash over you. Yeah, yes. I mean, I agree. And the electric piano thing is what I'm talking about with like it being properly mixed. Like, it's got that sharp Brent early 80s electric piano sound, which that one Dix Picks with the Scarlet Fire, I think it's the first Dix Picks with Brent, where he is playing that same electric piano effect, but it sounds like somebody hitting a xylophone. It's like so loud and so sharp, and it like just like kind of ruins that Scarlet for me. It's the same effect, but I think we're finally, you know, with these, not just this release, but the Dave's Pick Sprint releases and like more recent 80s Grateful Dead releases, hearing what it sounds like properly balanced in the mix. And I like the sort of sonic textures that Brent brings to the table. Like, obviously, I'm like a Keith partisan still, and I love what Keith does in a China writer, but I think you're right. This is like a different approach, and it actually is nice to hear that after we kind of overloaded maybe on the 70s in our Dix Picks series. So, yeah, I mean, it's great. I think, you know, a couple episodes ago, I said it was Goose curious. I think maybe I'm 80s curious, and so like the early 80s is me getting into appreciation of what the 80s Dead were doing, and maybe I need to work up to the late 80s a little more when Brent is, as you say, like co-leader of the band rather than just, you know, introducing some interesting new sonic flavors that push the Dead in some different directions.
I mean, I think just generally speaking, I'm excited to see more shows from the 80s and 90s getting released. There was a recent Dave's Picks from Dave's Picks 39, where it was 1983. You know, 83 not necessarily regarded as like a great Grateful Dead year, but like that's a really cool show. Mm-hmm. Again, I'm going to speak up for Dave's Picks 44, which I've been loving. Like, that's my favorite Grateful Dead album I've heard in a while. So I just love hearing these different eras and allowing less heralded periods in the Grateful Dead to shine, because I think every period has something to give, even if it's like, you know, even if it's not your favorite era, to appreciate what they were doing at a particular moment in time, it just adds to the richness of this band's story. And you don't get that if you're just listening to, you know, one decade or, you know, one lineup of this band.
Mm-hmm. So Steve, should I buy the box set? $175?
I think you should go on eBay and get a copy of Dave's Picks 44, which I'm hitting hard in
right.
this episode.
Will you? Can you dub a tape for me?
Yeah, absolutely. I was just gonna shout out too, like Dave's Picks 40 was another 1990 show. That was
Deer Creek, right? I have that one.
Yeah, that's like right before Brent died.
Yeah.
It was like July 18th and 19th.
Like his third to last show or something, yeah.
Yeah, I don't want to dwell on this because it's just sad and kind of spooky, but like he sounded really good.
Yeah.
Before his death. I mean, it wasn't, I don't know. I'm not privy to what was going on in his personal life at the time. I'm sure he wasn't living a super healthy lifestyle given that he passed away pretty soon after this, but not translating musically. I mean, he was bringing it right up until the end with the Dead. So
yeah.
it is amazing to listen to these shows and just be like, wow, like he passed away like so soon. Like he basically got off the road and died from this tour. It's just amazing.
Yeah. Well, I feel like we've really played the greatest hits here at the end of our mini tour, Steve, because we're talking about how sad Brent's death was, how good Without Annette is, me complaining about keyboard and guitar tones. We really gave the fans what they wanted here, I think, at the end of our mini tour, talking about the Grateful Dead. So,
well, that's right. And these were our comfort listens, and hopefully it was comforting for you too. And we want to thank Smart Wool again for sponsoring this mini run of mini episodes. So yeah, thank you for listening. And I'm sure we'll be back at some point. I don't know when.
This isn't, it's not goodbye. It's just see you later. As you can see, spontaneous things happen. Steve and I get together, spontaneous jams. At any time, you could get a 36 from the vault in your podcast feed. So,
exactly. Buy a lot of smart wool and we'll be back sooner rather than later.
Smart wool will send us on tour again. So, and keep harassing us on Twitter. It was great when Rick from Goose played Tennessee Jed with Phil and Friends, and we had like 15 people simultaneously tweeting at us about it. So,
yeah. I feel like I have to pretend to hate Tennessee Jed now more than I actually do. I feel like I let people down if I'm like, I just don't like hearing it on every Dick's Picks album. Right. I actually don't hate it that much, but people don't want to hear that shit. They want to hear us hating Jed.
Exactly.
I'm fine doing it. So thank you all for listening to this episode of 36 from the Vault. It's been great doing this tour, and we'll see you down the road.
Yep. See y'all later.
Osiris.
I don't think it overstates things to say that the Beatles were the greatest gift to entertainment and culture of our time, a secular religion, if you will, with their universal appeal and demonstrable impact on people's lives. I'm Robert Rodriguez, host of Something About the Beatles. With every episode, I speak with historians, musicians, artists, and Beatle witnesses, all in the service of fresh insights into the most joyous cultural entity the world has ever known. I hope you'll join me and listen to Something About the Beatles, now on Evergreen and wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Krista Makes, guitarist and vocalist for Less Than Jake, and host of Krista Makes a Podcast, a songwriting podcast where every week I'm joined by an amazing guest to break down the writing, recording, and release of one iconic song from their career. In our giant evergreen back catalog of episodes, we've had rock legends such as Dee Snider and Huey Lewis, punk rock favorites like Mark Hoppus, Fat Mike, and Brett Gurewitz, and up-and-coming artists of today such as Liz Stokes of the Beths and Genesis Owusu. We've had guests from all genres and styles of music, and I guarantee that if you peruse our back catalog, you'll see several episodes that'll make you say, "Man, I gotta hear that." Whether you're a fan of music or a creator of music yourself, you'll take away a whole new appreciation for the songs you know and love. Krista Makes a Podcast is available for free on all the places you could possibly listen to podcasts, and new episodes come out every Monday.